Акция под названием «Марш миллионов» начнется в 4.
Первая в осеннем политическом сезоне акция согласована.
Организаторы «Марша миллионов» в Москве
с лозунгами против репрессий и за перевыборы участники.
A new season of protests kicks off this weekend with mass rallies planned for Moscow and other cities. But in addition to the opposition's long-standing demands for early elections and a more competitive and pluralistic political system, a new element will be added to the protest mix in what promises to be a very hot autumn: social issues. In the coming months, Russian authorities are due to implement a series of reforms of the country's creaking social welfare infrastructure, including its pension and healthcare systems. Utilities prices are also expected to rise. Additionally, Russia's entry into the World Trade Organization earlier this summer has sparked increasing anxiety among labor unions and rank-and-file workers. The prevailing protest mood and the addition of social issues to the equation appears to present a political opportunity for Russia's left-wing forces if they can seize it. Left-front leader Sergei Udaltsov says this fall's protests will take on an unmistakably social character. And in addition to attending Saturday's March of Millions, the Communist Party is also planning its own two-day protests later this month. Will the upcoming political season turn into a season of opportunity for Russia's left? Hello and welcome to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me, back from vacation, is my regular co-host Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. Welcome, Kirill.
Hello.
Kirill, it seems to me the authorities are a bit on the horns of a dilemma with the upcoming social reforms. Not pursuing them, in the opinion of most analysts on one hand, carries the risk of damaging Russia's hard-won macroeconomic stability, one of the true achievements of the Putin regime. But pursuing them, on the other hand, risks inflaming the rural and working classes, which until now have been the regime's most reliable supporters since they lost the middle class. On the other hand, there just doesn't appear to be an organized political force on the left that is truly capable of harnessing the political discontent. How much of a danger does the current situation pose for the authorities, and how much of an opportunity does it present for the left?
It's a very serious situation because there is a kind of contradiction between these efforts on the macroeconomical level, on the on the one point, and on the second, this is a new strategy, new PR and social strategy of third Putin's term. Because as we saw it from the beginning of his electoral campaign, he is trying as a response to creative class, you know,
rebellion,
protests,
yeah,
and so on. He's trying to depend on so-called working class, especially from Russian regions.
But economics are creating a situation where he has to irritate them.
Yes, and that is the contradiction, because he is he's this president who made all this economic situation, and all Putin's regime is based on the, you know, some kind of mixture of a state market economy and neoliberal ideas. Mm-hmm. And this mixture is very poisonous, as we know. And this damages working class and rural population and even intelligentsia and part of so-called creative class. So trying to persuade his aims on the, you know, economical terms and so on, he is at the same time tries to persuade his aims, absolutely opposite aims and goals on the social side of the problem. Mm-hmm. And that is the contradiction. But this is not just the problem for Putin himself and his regime. And Putin, you know,
3.0. We're already into 3.0?
Yes, 3.0 or 33.0.
So they call this an upgrade,
Upgrade, yes. So this is not the problem for himself and his regime. This is a problem also and for the opposition, Russian opposition, because Russian opposition, as we mentioned a lot of times during our previous podcast, Russian opposition consists of several parts. And these parts are not together, and it's not, you know, they don't have even the same political and social and cultural and religious, even religious aims. For instance, liberals from creative class and communists from the left part and Udaltsov, and I think we'll speak about Udaltsov a bit later, and his supporters and nationalists. Mm-hmm. So this is a very poisonous mixture too. So we will see, and we are now we see kind of, you know, battle of two or meeting or, you know, some kind of process involving two poisonous mixtures.
Yeah, to change the matter, there seems to be a lot of trains converging on this one junction right now.
Yeah.
Do you see a political force out there that can, on the left, that can harness this, what seems to be inevitable social discontent that we're going to see once these reforms are implemented? I mean, the Communist Party is by far the most organized of the left, but yet they're a bit dated.
You're speaking mildly, yeah? This is a very outdated political force, and all the attempts to reform Russian Communist Party, and I know a lot of people who tried to undertake this process of the reforms in the end of 1990s, Vladimir Simaga, I think you remember him. Mm-hmm. It was a kind of millionaire who was a member of the Communist Party. another one had been undertaken by Selezniov, former speaker of Duma and so on. But leader of Russian communists, Zyuganov, he is a very experienced political fighter, but on the very narrow front.
Yes.
Just inside his own party.
Yeah.
And he's very, 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 you know, cautious in his relationships with the Kremlin and so on.
Well, this is the thing about the communists under Zyuganov, is that they're not really interested in taking power or even really pursuing their political agenda. It seems to me that their role is to keep their seat at the table as the systemic opposition. They get to play that role as if on the stage in a theater, but they don't seem to be terribly interested in taking it anywhere beyond that.
Do you remember our conversation, I think 2 months ago, about who are the real conservatives in Russia?
Yeah.
So Russian communists, they are real conservatives in Russia because they try to conserve not the position of Communist Party in Russian society as it was in Soviet times, no, but they try to conserve their unity of the party and their very survival of the party with those members who are now, you know, over 50 or 60 years old. So that is their aim, and they succeed in this on this front. But on the other, from the other point of view, of course, they failed. Permanently fail, were failing, and still are failing on all the political directions.
Yet paradoxically, and the paradoxes never cease here, nobody can put people on the streets like the communists. Nobody has the organizational muscle of that party, but yet they don't seem to want to use that muscle
They take part in some demonstrations and rallies. It was in February, and they're going to participate in. On the Saturday
tomorrow, and they're also going to have planning protests for later this month. A 2-day affair is what I understand, focused on social issues.
Yes, but I think their leadership of Communist Party has to participate in this protest because of the pressure from the, you know, simple members of the Communist Party, because they are they're afraid to lose them. And they're afraid that they're, you know, relatively young people from communist organization, they just desert from their ranks and join, you know, Udaltsov or some other nationalist maybe organizations and so on. But my main point in this is that now we see, birth of a new political power in Russia. It's a kind of mixture of communist or socialist or leftist and nationalist ideas. And that will be, I think, the most powerful movement in the forthcoming 2 or 3 years in Russia, because nationalists usually they have left opinion about all the society and economics and so
in
on.
The Russian context,
in
yes.
Russian context, so not we are not speaking yeah. you know yeah. in the Western terms
yeah.
in Russian terms nationalists
are leftists,
yes, it's impossible
odd.
Yes, but everything is possible in Russia, you know.
Sticking with the systemic opposition, we had some news today related to a Just Russia. Gennady Gudkov was kicked out of the Duma. Used some very colorful language from the podium yeah. of the Duma in the process of that.
I love his speech.
His speech was quite good. His speech was quite good. Now, a Just Russia is another interesting case. Nominally a center-left party, in reality created as an obedient, regime-friendly center-right party, that over time the party began to change and to split. If you look at the roll call from today's vote on Gudkov, that split is very, very evident. Is there a future there for the, let's just say, the rebel faction or the Gudkov faction of a Just Russia? Is there a potential there for that to become a left wing force that can or a social democratic force?
I think no, because initially this Just Russia has been, you know, organized by Surkov.
Yes.
And his people in the political spectrum as a mixture of the left, not leftist, but left, moderately left,
center-left, yeah.
center-left, and nationalist mm-hmm. Groups and politicians. Do you remember that, for instance, Dmitry Rogozin was mm-hmm. part of the process yes. and so on? So that was an attempt to push away communists from the political
right.
spectrum, because communists, they're at the same time they're leftist and they're at the same time nationalist.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, adore Russian Orthodox Church. That
right.
is very funny.
Well, yes.
Just Russia, you know, they played their role dutifully and very good. But who began the attack on Just Russia? It was not the Just Russia initiative or Mironov or Gudkov or whoever. That was in the beginning of the process was Surkov himself,
mm.
who was, you know, fed up with, you know, this passive and not such interesting political party. And he began, you know, some intrigues, yeah,
mm-hmm.
intrigues to undermine political power of Just Russia. And unexpectedly, Just Russia began to become a very, very, very important part of Russian political process. Not because of something, of their strength, of their ability, of their leaders, and so on, but because of a lack of everything
right.
in the United Russia political party. That was, you know, kind of, as theologists say, negative theology.
Mm-hmm.
When you're speaking about God, not speaking about him.
Right, right. Well, this was all part of Surkov's plan when he was trying to create Prokhorov's center-right party, and
yeah.
he was also running into problems with United Russia, saying,
yeah.
you're going to have to share power a little bit. This is when
yeah.
when Surkov
yeah.
was trying to create this, what I call managed pluralism in the Duma. And after a year ago when Putin announced his return, and after the Duma elections, a Just Russia really went off the reservation, or at least a faction of the party went off the reservation and went into full blown opposition. This began with local elections back in 2010, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And it continued, and it seems to have reached its climax today with Gudkov getting kicked out. What do you see as the future of that party then now?
I'm not sure that this party will survive the forthcoming 2 or 3 years.
Mm.
But I think the main point of our conversation of the future of Just Russia is not just this party itself. It's a position of Kremlin administration and Volodin himself, or who will
mm-hmm.
you know, change Volodin in this position, because we just remembered Surkov. It's a very interesting that part of the responsibility of the failure of all these projects from the Kremlin point of view, first of all, Just Russia and then Prokhorov's party, part of the responsibility for all these things, we can blame on Surkov himself. He was, and still is, too artistic. You know, he's
an artist at heart.
Yes, 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 yes. He's you know, he inventing something, but in several months he's just fed
he wants,
up.
He wants to tinker with it. He wants to change it. He wants
to change everything and so
he
on.
He wants
quickly,
the new
quickly,
iPhone.
Quickly. Yes, 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 yes. So, and this is not just, Putin 3.0 or iPhone 5.0, but Surkov wanted to be, wanted to have a new political, toys every new political season.
Yeah, yeah.
Fall 2009,
right?
Spring 2010. It's the not the same. Yeah, he's Volodin is absolutely opposite. He's very calm in some sense, and he's not artistic, definitely. And he's playing a more long term game. He's trying to play, but his main mistake is that he cannot understand what is the game he is playing.
Right. Where Surkov, I think, in defense of his artistry,
yeah,
always understood the game he was playing. And it wasn't just that he needed new toys. He was trying to stay ahead of the curve of where society was going, and to keep the kind of the systemic opposition and the parties that were playing ball with the Kremlin. He wanted to keep that ahead of the curve of society, pretty much. And so this is where, when he wanted to create Prokhorov's party, if you look at what's happened in the last year, well, that was an attempt to capture that creative class that went into rebellion. It was an attempt to keep that class in the fold, so to speak. And if Surkov were running the show right now, I'm sure he would be trying to come up with a creative leftist project that would stay ahead of the curve, that's going to be going, that's going to forestall the rebellion of the working classes that I'm sure we're going to see this fall and winter. Volodin doesn't think that way. His strategy is to hit an opponent over the head with a baseball bat rather than charm them into bringing them into the fold.
Sorry for interrupting you. It's a very interesting subject to discuss, maybe not now. The crucial difference between political culture of people like Surkov and people
like Volodin,
because it's an absolutely different political and cultural and social context. When we're speaking about Surkov, he was a part of political technologies movement in 1990s, and that is the legacy of the, it's very interesting, of the some movements, underground philosophical and political movements during Soviet times, Shchedrovitsky and all his classes and so on. And the very idea of political technologies, they laid there.
Right.
Political context of Volodin and people like him, it's not Soviet, but post-Soviet bureaucracy.
Yeah. Yeah,
and post-Soviet bureaucracy cannot understand post-Soviet Russian society because they have no any connection with it.
Well, society is moving much faster than the bureaucracy, put it that way. Society is changing much faster than the bureaucracy, and that perhaps is unsurprising. And this is why, and we always, God, we give Surkov a lot of praise on this podcast, but I mean, he was the one of the people that seemed to understand that in the elite.
Yes, because if we can speak a lot of about the political culture or some sources of such people like Surkov and so on, but the result is obvious. These people like Surkov and some other political specialists and technologists and so on, they read a lot.
Yeah.
They know a lot. They can make mistakes. They can be, villains and so on, but they are connected to the society.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to all the society, but to some very important part of the society, and especially public opinion. And when we're speaking about Volodin and now Vladimir Putin,
They're isolated and not a touch right now.
Yes,
they're isolated and not a touch.
They're isolated. And that is, I think, the main explanation of the latest steps of Putin's regime and so on.
Going back to the left, and we're going to discuss Udaltsov at length, but just briefly, because if you're looking at the political forces that could possibly harness the discontent we're going to see, Udaltsov is a rising star right now. And he's, as we're going to talk about later in the program, he seems to be the new face of the Russian left. Is do you think he's capable of harnessing this? Is his movement capable of harnessing this? Or is he still just a street fighter and that's about it?
I'll divide this question into two ones. Personally, yes. Politically, not.
Mm-hmm. Explain yourself.
Yes, I'll try. Personally, because he is fearless fighter, real fearless fighter who is able to come to the end in his fight. Yes, and that is, as we discussed several months ago, it's a very serious problem when I'm speaking about Russian opposition. It's a kind of the most part of Russian opposition, especially liberal opposition, is freelance opposition. Mm-hmm. They are not real politicians. They are writers, journalists, editors, and whoever, businessmen. But they are participating. They participate in political process. Time from time, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Today I'm going to to my castle in South France to spend 2 weeks there with some people and with my family and so on. That's why I'm not participating in the protests, forthcoming protests, and tomorrow or whatever. But this is not a type of behavior, political behavior of a real fighter, especially in such harsh situation as in modern Russia. Maybe it was okay in the beginning of 2000s when you can just criticize Putin once a week, and everyone knows that you are a great opposition opposition politician. Yeah, but now this the situation claims that you have to, it's a full-time job.
Right.
It's a full-time job, really. And Udaltsov is ready, and he was ready, and he was working for a long time as a full-time, politician. This is my first answer. My second answer is no, because there is no any political ideas, economical, social ideas behind his group and behind himself. What he is speaking about what kind of future he can offer to Russian society. I never ever heard from him about the economic system of future Russia, about the not the critical remarks about social injustice in modern Russia, but what is his image of a future social relationships in Russia. It's about culture, about religion, about whatever. He never speaks about all these things. That's why I'm absolutely sure and that he is a very good politician for a revolutionary situation, but not for some kind of new regime, the building, constructing of new regime, and for a serious political everyday work as a political party leader.
Right. In a few moments, we'll zero in and take a closer look at Sergei Udaltsov. Is he really the new face of the Russian left? I'd like to remind you, you're listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. I'd also like to remind you, you could subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes, you can read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical. There was a time not so long ago when Sergei Udaltsov was an unapologetic fan of Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong, and Pol Pot. But as his political star has risen, the left front leader has softened his tone considerably.
I went through all that. I was a pretty young guy back then, and I didn't really understand everything. We all grow up. Even now, I'm sure, I don't ideally understand everything. You have to be learning all the time, educating yourself. I understand this very well. Now, personally, I am very far from any sort of praise for Stalin or other tyrants, any praise for the Soviet period. Although, undoubtedly, you have to evaluate them objectively.
That was Udaltsov speaking to RFRL's Russian service this week. So, Kirill, what's your take on Udaltsov's evolution? Is it, I said revolution, but his, well, that was a Freudian slip, but I think we'll go with it. What's your take on Udaltsov's evolution? Is he making the transition from a street fighting firebrand to a, for lack of a better word, more respectable politician?
Respectable politician in what meaning and what sense of this?
That's why I said for lack of a better word. When I was writing the script out, I couldn't think of a better word, so I just went with respectable.
It's a question of terminology. If I'm speaking about Western, respectable politician, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, a respectable politician in, you know, France or Germany or UK, especially in the United States, can't make, warm remarks about Stalin, Mao Zedong, and so on. So in this sense, he's absolutely right. So his image for, Western usage is clearing. Yes, absolutely. And he's, increasing his popularity, I think, among Western, observers and so on. But if you want to be in commas, to be a respectable politician in Russia, you have to make warm remarks about, first of all, Soviet period, that was something good. Mm. Education, maybe medicine, Gagarin, ice hockeyists, what else? Stalin buildings, Eisenstein movies, and so on. Second, the lack of, social injustice. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you have to speak warmly about Russian Orthodox Church. Mm-hmm. From the ordinary point of view.
Well, to be a systemic politician, you do.
Yes, but respectable too. So I never heard of any well-known politician, if we speak about, some kind of official politician or some opposition who can speak against Russian Orthodox Church, or who dismisses totally the Soviet period or period of history. I never heard about it. Some radical politicians or radical, activists from opposition, of course, they can speak so, but they are not very popular and they don't play an important role in the political game now. And the third person whom you have to speak about very warmly and so on, it's Russian emperors, especially Nicholas II and Peter I. Nicholas II as a victim and Peter I as a hero. Uh-huh. So
You don't see yourself doing any of these things.
So we have a very interesting collection.
That is a very interesting collection.
Absolutely contradictional, because if you admire Soviet period, you can't be admirer of Russian Orthodox Church and especially of Russian Empire. And especially Nicholas II, who had been killed with all his family by Bolsheviks and so on. So there are no any pure, distinction.
Right.
In this historical memory in Russian society, that is not a evil will of some Russian politicians or Russian political elite and so on. It's kind of mirror. Mm-hmm. Mirror of, state of public opinion today. And that is it's my personal opinion, and that is the result of 1990s. When I am not a moralist, and I am not an admirer of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, but he spoke very seriously about attitude to the Soviet times and about the attitude to Soviet period of Russian history and an attitude toward, totalitarian regime with all its crimes and so on. So there were no any serious state attitude to all these things. And the result of this was their state and the content of historical education in Russian schools and Russian universities. And what we have now is the result of
confusion.
Yes, it's just a mixture. It's kind of confusion. It's a strange cocktail of everything with everything. Strange of mixture of everything with everything.
It's a nostalgia cocktail.
Yes. Nostalgic, but I cannot understand, you know, logically, the object of this nostalgia.
Right.
What is the just the past?
Right. It's the parts of the past we prefer to remember and how we prefer to remember them.
Yes, but all this past is absolutely contradictory.
Yes,
yes?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the question. And Udaltsov, and it's my praise for him. He could make his, way from his previous ideas that Joseph Stalin was a great hero and so on to the pure left in the Western meaning of the word. From the position of, close to Russian Communist Party, but more radical, but the same.
Mm-hmm.
To the position of the modern, French or German leftists.
Well, this gets into something that I wanted to talk about, and this is we've been talking about the left in terms of the social and economic left. But when you speak of the left in the Western context, it's a little bit broader than that. It includes feminists.
It
includes people who advocate the rights of ethnic, religious, and racial minorities. It includes people who advocate gay rights. You see this in Russian society. You see this Pussy Riot, for example, is one example of it. But you see this kind of bubbling up in Russian society in NGOs and things like that. But there isn't any organized political force that's harnessing this. And it certainly isn't connected, even though I consider it left on the spectrum. It isn't connected to what we traditionally in Russia consider the left. Now, I don't know where Udaltsov is on issues like this.
Yes,
I just don't know where he is on issues like this, if he could ever ally himself with those forces. But if you're going to have a truly coherent left that's going to be a powerful political force, this is the marriage between part of the creative class and part of the working class. This is one of the ways you can marry them. But yet, much of the working class, not just in Russia but elsewhere, is hostile to things like feminism and gay rights and
it's
so
disappearing,
so
by the way, as a class in the post-industrial economies and so on. So how can you be a working class hero if the working class itself is disappearing, dissolving all the time?
In Russia or in the West, you mean?
In the West, in Russia too. In Russia too, because if you compare the situation or social structure of the society of the Soviet times and post-Soviet times, you will see that the numbers of working class is decreasing dramatically every year. So that is the contradiction. Definitely, Udaltsov wanted to be a working class hero.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to be a hero of some, group of people, you have to share the attitude to some problems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I absolutely agree with you. Working class is not, a beacon of political correctness. And
well, it's not left in that sense by any stretch of the imagination.
It's no more left. So I think we can agree that working class is no more left as it was in the end of 19th century and the beginning of 20th century. Now it's absolutely it's not the same class, and it's not the same class which Karl Marx or Kautsky or Georg Lukács was writing about. This is absolutely another story, and the main mistake of such politicians and activists like Udaltsov is that they try to to be based on the interests of so-called working class.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the social problem, the great social problem, the greatest social problem of modern Russia is not, kind of class struggle between working class and capitalists.
Right.
The main problem is poverty and social inequality. and the lack of so-called social lifts, elevators. And
well,
so,
yes, and this gets back to remember modernization. When's the last time we heard that word? But that's it's the lack of a modernized, diversified economy that could provide these social lifts that you're that you're talking about. And this is another thing that could unite the working and the creative classes, because both stand to benefit from that. So you, from what I'm hearing, is you do not see Udaltsov as the new face of a new Russian left.
Definitely no.
Do you see anybody out there or any force out there that is the new face of the Russian left? Or that could be the new face of the Russian left.
I don't know them personally, but I can imagine that could be people from the nationalist wing of the opposition movement. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely sure, and this new Russian left movement will be absolutely hostile to the classic and contemporary leftist movements in United States and especially in Europe, in Western Europe. And it's very interesting that the most ardent bearers of these values like feminism and ideas like feminism, like multiculturalism and so on, now in Russia this is a part of creative class.
Yeah.
Do you remember this French term, bobo, bohème bourgeoisie? Yeah?
Right.
It's funny, but Russian bobos are the most radical leftist in Western terms.
In cultural terms,
they're most important and leftist fighters now on Russian political scene. And those who are defending the interests of working class hero, they are absolutely backward.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to, you know, to build a kind of model of, eternal class struggle against capitalists and so on. That is not true.
Mm-hmm.
That is not true, definitely. And this is one of the few things which, if we are returning to Volodin head from a presidential administration, that is one of the few things that he understands very well. That's why they began this course on, you know, to try to base this Putin 3.0 regime on a working class from regional Russia, because they see the lack of the initiative, oppositional initiative from this side.
To reach out
yes.
to them.
Yeah. And definitely this is a great danger for all Russian society, because all this protest, economical and social protests against the economic situation, social situation, social inequality, and so on, this protest will not be organized properly, and this is a great danger of anarchy.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Do you see them pursuing these social reforms in earnest, or do you think they'll get cold feet in fear of offending their new base?
I think they will stop everything in the first sign of discontent in the society, because Putin's regime, they're not interested in real politics and real economics and so on. They're interested in the surviving.
But their survival is to a degree tied to the economy, and this is a going back to the, and we've come full circle as we're coming to the end of the program here. But they are on the horns of a dilemma. There's a paradox here, because if they do stop these reforms, if you believe what the economists say, this is going to create macroeconomic problems for the Russian economy.
I think that
can they muddle through? Or are they hoping just to muddle through? I mean,
I think I will mistake when we're discussing all those things that we think
they're rational.
Yes, we think about them thinking in our terms.
Right.
They are thinking about their survival not in politological, political terms or social terms, economical terms. They are thinking in physiological terms, in social Darwinism terms. Mm. They try to, to survive as group of people, of this group of
this political
people.
Class
yes.
wants to stay
yes.
in power. Period.
And that is all. And if we'll see, if you look at the history of some Latin American dictatorships, we'll see the same, absolutely the same picture in all the situation. For instance, you know, Peronism, especially late Peronism, Peronism in the 1970s. If you'll see, if you look at, you know, all these dictator regimes in Central American countries in 1950s and 60s and even 70s, you will see absolutely the same situation, same mechanism of their attempts to survive all their challenges.
And they all failed.
In some sense, in some sense, yes. In some sense, no. Who are in power now in Argentina? Okay. Peronist party.
Yeah, although it's not the same Peronist party that was in power. But well, we got big protests in Moscow on Saturday and in other cities, and it's going to be a hot autumn after that. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. I would like to remind you, you're listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFURL. In the studio with me has been my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrym, managing editor of RFURL's Russian service. Thanks for the great discussion,
thank
Kirill.
Thank you.
And I'd also, as always, like to thank our producer, Tanya Kancheva. I'd also like to remind you, you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You can read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical. Join us again next week. And now, as always, I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noise MC.